There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1074, December 17th, 2024. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Talking points for this week: Cadillac in Formula One, powered by Ferrari. Carlito at Williams, powered by Pesos. Checo Perez, powerless at Red Bull. And we remember Rega. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max serves his penalty for swearing in Rwanda. Colapinto back in the mix at Alpine, also known as the Collaborators. Bottas regrets his entire career at stake. And Fernando says he is ready and fit for the 2025 season. And this week's interview, ladies and gentlemen, well, that last week's was so good that it's going to be hard to top it, but for sure, we may and we can. Yes, this week we have a current F1 driver, the man himself, Nico Hülkenberg. So very, very exciting. It's a great little conversation. I think you guys are going to enjoy this. This is from Las Vegas, where everybody was in a good mood, but a little chilly. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, it's the holidays. I want to remind everyone that, yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on Support F1 Weekly. You know you want to. Nass, I know you've been visiting with your sister. You're making the holiday rounds. I hope you're doing well. How are you?
Well, in good news for mankind, Formula One action continued after the final Grand Prix of the season in Abu Dhabi. The one-day test session saw Ferrari of Charles Leclerc set the fastest time. His very new ex-teammate Carlos Sainz Jr. was only 0.12 seconds behind in second. George Russell was third, Nico Hülkenberg was fourth, and the Italian Kimi, Signor Antonelli, completed the top five. Many hopefuls and some doubtfuls were also given the opportunity in the racing community to sample Formula One machinery. Ayumu Iwasa, Red Bull Jr., with a little help from Honda, was sixth in a RB, or Toro Rosso for simplicity. McLaren's IndyCar driver Pat O'Ward was seventh in a Papaya car. Jack Doohan, now a veteran of one Grand Prix under his belt, was eighth for Alpine, ahead of the new junior from Estonia, Paul Aaron, who was driving the second Alpine car. Once upon a time, Tony Bennett used to sing, "I want to be around to pick up the pieces when someone breaks your heart." Well, sharing the front row to pick up the pieces of Checo Perez's corazón, or heart in English, are Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda. An axe is about to fall any time as we record this. Liam was 13th fastest in the RB, and Yuki was 17th during the Red Bull. Yuki said he felt comfortable with the more power of the Red Bull car than his Visa Cash App RB. Honda wants him to be next to Max in 2025, but I think Red Bull will go with more mentally stable Lawson. The few races he has done in Formula One gives me the impression he is not afraid of fighting with big boys with big balls. Liam likes to do the talking with his right foot. On the other hand, Yuki cannot keep calm and carry on. DC called a second seat at Red Bull the least desirable seat in Formula One. Amazingly, some people want this seat, and we wish them good luck. I say best way to find out is to give the young people, the new Gaslys, the Albons, the Kvyats, a 3-to-5 race appearance in the Red Bull abattoir and see how deep their throat will be slit by Max. If the cut is more than 0.3 second, which I suspect will be the case, then Dr. Marco to decide if the whippersnapper is a keeper in the junior team, or turn them into Mariposa or Papillon. Free as the wind, free as the wind. That is the way you should be. Mr. Rogers, between Yuki and Liam, who would you like to see be the sacrificial lamb in the Red Bull boucherie?
That's such a great scenario. Both of them would be fascinating. I mean, you're right. I mean, none of them have a chance of beating Max, but who has the closest chance is the big question. Liam, I don't know. Sometimes Yuki shows beautiful moments of brilliance and speed. So, and Honda would like to see Yuki in there, and I think Honda has a little pull, except for now they're going to be working for Fernando El Machismo. So I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting. And not only that, but the situation with Perez and his contract. I mean, his contract is a doozy. His manager is a professional, that's for sure, because they're talking up to 75 million euros. I mean, this guy is going to walk out of here, God, happier, without a seat, almost. Why deal with the stress? And Max. So I think Perez is retiring. He's got children. He's probably got another one on the way. I mean, he's got plenty for the in-flight burritos in the future. So, yeah, I can't wait that's over with because it's somewhat distracting. But I think in the end, it's going to be Liam. But I would like to see Yuki too. Maybe they could split it up. Well, half a baby to one guy, half a baby to the other. Gracias.
I think Perez's seat could have easily gone to Colapinto had he not turned into the Argentine Andrea de Crasheres at Interlagos and Las Vegas. Young American Jack Crawford, who is also known as Jack Pack, also drove in this test with Aston Martin. He is their reserve driver. He was 20th fastest. He will race next season in Formula 2. That will be his third season, and for all practical purposes, he would need to win the championship to keep the F1 dream alive. And now to a notable MIA during the preseason testing. LCH was unable to mount a prancing horse at Yas Marina due to commercial considerations. According to Toto, it's called prior commitments with sponsors. But we are not far from January 1, 2025. There is a track called Fiorano, which is owned by Scuderia, and soon a red car will be testing there, with the driver staying at Enzo's house at the track. Only one other driver had this privilege before, Michael Schumacher. This time it's not Charles Leclerc, so who could that be? Signor Binotto has said he would not have signed Lewis Hamilton, to which Signor Vasser responded, he did not think Lewis would be going to Sauber, so slings and arrows have started already. And of course, there are those who think Lewis is beyond his sell-by date. Judging by how his older ex-teammate has done when given a competitive package, and not forgetting how LCH did against this double world champion, I think Heart of Rock and Roll is still beating with Huey Lewis, and the Heart of Racing is still beating with Lewis Hamilton. They say the Heart of Rock and Roll is still beating, and for what I've seen, I believe them. Now the other may be barely breathing, but the Heart of Rock and Roll, Heart of Rock and Roll is still beating. Which brings me to question of the day. Can LCH do to CL what JB did to him at McLaren? Win two races before man from Monaco gets one. What say you?
That's very interesting. I sort of like that, except that, you know, Lewis Hamilton, he's got a tough mental attitude. I think he takes it pretty good. Thick skin, just like Fernando, you know, machismo. But and Charles Leclerc certainly, I think, is up there in toughness, but I think he's a bit more sensitive. And I'm telling you, if Lewis Hamilton comes out of the box with a little marinara sauce stuck in his little beard and wins the first race of the Ferrari, I'm telling you, Leclerc will be broken. That would be a big one. And that should be the coup that Lewis is going to be shooting for. Very Fernando-esque. So, yes, it's going to be intense. I'm telling you. That's what we're all waiting for. It was like when Fernando moved teams. I mean, finally, LCH has moved on after 14 years. And everybody, I mean, it's going to be how the suit fits them. Is it going to be customized, made in Compton? I mean, who knows? How much leeway is Ferrari going to give the dude and his brothers? You know, will that affect how Ferrari look? I mean, this could change everything. But what straightens all that out is Lewis Hamilton staying El Comandatore's home. And then there's a secret light above the bed and they beam the light down into the brain and he becomes one with Ferrari and the Pope. So there you have it, Nasser.
Moving on, we come to name and numbers. Michael Andretti may have won the battle, but he sure did lose the war with Formula One management. The Formula One team he was going to bring in Formula One with General Motors Cadillac brand and his famous surname was last week registered in England as Cadillac Formula Racing. The only Andretti associated with the team will be Mario Andretti. He is on the board of the team. I think this is more out of respect for the 1978 Formula One World Champion than his regular involvement on a day-to-day basis. Some years ago, I had a lengthy chat with Mario at the Atlanta airport. We were on the same flight to Tampa. He told me after he retired from racing, he was approached by a well-known ex-IndyCar team owner to become partners with him. Mario said he was interested in racing car and never had any interest in being a team owner. Since the team will be entering in 2026 under the new Concorde Agreement, Dan Torres and his partner will have to pay about $450 million as entry fee. Hopefully, this will help Christian Horner and Toto Wolff upgrade from Denny's at Saint-Devot to a more fancy restaurant. In other name news, Peter Bayer, or maybe it's Bayer, the CEO of what we know as Toro Rosso, has clarified that the name of the team effective 2025 will be Visa Cash App Racing Bull VCARB in short. This follows confusion among media and fans during the 2024 season. The president of FIA, Mr. Mohammed bin Sulayem, has said he would like to see 12th team also on the grid. I think that's a great idea. Would you like to see another team on the grid, Senor, with the name Equipo Rapido by Machismo from Oviedo?
That sure would be cool. But no, Fernando's smart enough. In its billions, billions, and billions, and with Renault gone, which would have been a true love story. No, I mean, a $450 million entry fee. Nah, you need giants like GM. Now, if Fernando and maybe, who knows, Hyundai want to do something, you never know. Hyundai's pretty pumped up these days with now I believe they're going into WEC. So I just don't know, but it would be good to see a 12th team. Hey, what about Super Aguri? They could come back. Super Aguri Jr. We always have Marussia. You never know. This war in Ukraine could end and all of a sudden everything is peachy. So I'm hoping for 12 teams, more action, more fun. And, you know, I have to admit it's the holidays. I did order some goodies from one of the Formula One teams, and they did a fantastic job. Great discounts. I'll say it. It's Haas F1. They were wonderful. I had everything from Europe here in 3 days, and the prices were phenomenal. Well, everybody's changing over there, so good time to buy. But I did order something from F1.com. The only thing I could say is le désastre. So there you have it, Nasser. My tip of the week for holiday shopping.
Now we come to some numbers. Among young drivers taking part in their first full Formula One season in 2025, they have selected these numbers. Gabriel Bortoleto selected number 5. This number was previously used by Sebastian Vettel and, of course, who can forget, red 5 of Nigel Mansell. Jack Doohan will race with number 7. Lewis Hamilton's replacement, Andrea Kimi Antonelli, will race with number 12. Number 87 will appear in Formula 1 for the first time in 2025, thanks to Olli Behrmann. Now a word from Sainz's sponsor, Santander. The word is adios to Ferrari. The Spanish bank have moved their sponsorship from Maranello to the Grove Garagista. Once the season starts, we will see Santander on Sainz's Williams. If Albon crumbles like a Keebler cookie against Carlito, there will be Alex, this is James, call on the team radio. And that will mean Frankie goes to Hollywood. In other words, Colapinto back in Formula Uno. Speaking of Colapinto, he could also be the beneficiary if Jack is put in the box by Pierre Gasly. I think there may be a casualty or two during this 2025 season, and Signor Briatore is already planning some action on this front. In Formula One, only 2 seats are guaranteed. And that should not surprise anyone, Max Verstappen and Lance Stroll. What say you, amigo, on the 2025 in-season casualty possibility?
Well, there certainly are some. I mean, I expect some. And with Flavio here permanently all season next year, it's going to be wonderful. He promised that they're going to win, baby. So it's going to be a lot of chop. He leaves a really big mess on the floor. So I hope Doohan gets his drives in soon because they may end. And yeah, like you said, Gasly is so pumped up, motivated that he could mop the floors with him. But we shall see. I might be underestimating Doohan's talent. And we'll see what happens at Aston Martin. You know, if Aston Martin is not super competitive, we know Ed Machismo is not going to be keeping his cool. I mean, he's running out of time. And he was pretty polite this year, Nasser. You have to give it to him. We didn't have any flare-ups. Very, very cheerful. Always thanked the team. But this 2025 season for Fernando is a big one. I know it's that Adrian Newey just showed up, but still, this is a big one. besides Lewis Hamilton, I'm telling you, Fernando is the one to watch. Believe me, Nasser.
Speaking of Flavio, he tells Di Meo, give me 3 years, I make you a winner. Luca Di Meo is the CEO of Renault Group. He brought back his paisan, Briatore, as special advisor for their Alpine F1 team. As we all know, Flavio has been very successful in spotting young talent. Both Alonso and Schumacher won back-to-back championships under his guidance. At Renault, he was well-liked till the Piquet problem. Flavio hired the right people and let them do their jobs. Ross Brawn, Rory Byrne, and Pat Simmons all worked under Briatore. I think with Mercedes' power, the engineering talent he will attract to Alpine, and the ability to snatch a good talent from another team. Good evening, Mr. Jordan. I can see Alpine winning races within 3 years. Mr. Rogers, do you feel new motivation with Flavio calling the shots at Alpine, or is this another Spyker saga?
I do. I admit it. I have fallen for the Flavio rose-colored glasses, and I think he can do it. It's going to be interesting for sure, but I think he can do it. He does attract good people. And now that Gasly coming to grips with the car. No, Flavio makes a big difference in a team. Like you said, he surrounds himself with good people. I think you could be right. Maybe 2 years, we could see him regularly on the podium. But that means you got to knock somebody out. And who could that be with McLaren dominating, Red Bull eyeing to come back, Ferrari on the edge of winning? There's so many teams that are super, super doing good. And of course, I'm expecting Aston to be at the top. So, wow, we've got a lot of great seasons coming ahead.
I think it is now time to take a break with some Pellegrini, and we shall return with Motorsports Mondial.
Very good, Nasser. Keep up the good work, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, this is Mika Häkkinen, double Formula One world champion. All the best for the readers, F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards. Today we have a double shot in the goodie bag. We start with special presentation, interview of the week, Nico Hülkenberg. I think this is our first interview with an active Formula One driver. In the past, we have interviewed George Russell and Esteban Ocon while they were reserve drivers. Hülkenberg won A1GP championship for Team Germany, which was then owned by Willy Weber, well known for being manager of Michael Schumacher. Hülkenberg is also among the select group of drivers who were able to win the GP2 championship in his first attempt, and he did the same thing when he showed up at Le Mans 24-hour race. This conversation starts with confirmation of time for the interview. Nico was in a good mood, and we wish him all the best at Sauber, soon to be Audi.
I think you can do it in this. I'll be really quick. Yes, no, yes.
Oh, are you in the Kimi Räikkönen program now? There you go. Okay, folks, I'm here with Nico Hülkenberg. Nico, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the Sin City. How does a night in Vegas feel compared to a night in Bahrain and Singapore?
Too cold, especially this time of the year.
Yeah, it is very cold here.
It is a bit chilly for my taste. And yeah, I mean, it's obviously a spectacular event, but the temperature does take a little bit of the great venue away.
How is the street circuit here compared to Baku and other street circuits you have raced on?
I like it. I liked the circuit last year. It's kind of a simple layout, but it's somehow still, I don't know, was enjoyable to drive. Obviously, you know, we're really in the city and very central in Las Vegas. So, you know, track-wise, they couldn't do too many crazy things. Obviously, we have a lot of long straights. We reach very high speeds. It's exciting all in all.
We have three races in the U.S. now in three different markets. Which one is your favorite?
Ooh. I think I still like the original the most, Austin. I don't know, it's one of my favorite tracks. And Texas is obviously very special and particular. And I don't know, this event and venue is, you know, a great atmosphere. And I've always really enjoyed myself there.
Last year you scored 9 points from 2 races. This year you have scored 31 points, and I believe you are 10th in the championship. What has been the biggest change or improvement from last year's car to this season?
I think our engineers understood the weaknesses and problems of last year's car, which were mainly on the aerodynamic side, and they managed to, you know, to fix the issues that we had, and that really, you know, turned things around and you know, made it possible for those performances this year.
Now, can you solve a mystery for me? You know, sometimes drivers complain the car is designed for my teammate. Does that happen in racing?
I'm not sure. I think it's more that, you know, however the car is, you know, it sometimes suits one driving style more than the other. And, you know, all the drivers have slightly different driving styles and preferences. So I think that's more what tends to happen.
You were very good in the rain. Last year you had qualified on the front row in Montreal before the penalty. And I will never forget your drive at Sepang in Avon GP. Hope you remember that. What went wrong in Sao Paulo?
Many things went wrong in Sao Paulo, you know, from start to finish. Not just in the race, but the whole weekend. We made a lot of small errors, you know, and at the end paid the price for it. So, yeah, it was a disappointing one for us. But, you know, we've digested it. It's in the past now and full focus on the last three.
What can you expect from the remaining three races?
Well, it's going to be a fight in the championship, that's for sure. You know, we're three teams fighting over P6. We need three good, clean weekends, you know, and maximize our potential. We've had a very strong package so far this season, and particularly in the last 5 to 10 races. So if we do a good job on the execution side, I think we have a realistic chance of getting that sixth position back.
This is your second and final season with MoneyGram Haas team. Can you share how this deal came about as you were out of full season ride for a few years?
Yeah, I think eventually, like, what was that, 2 years ago or summer of 2022, you know, we started conversations back then with Gunther, who was still here, obviously, and I told him about my interest and my comeback plans. And, you know, I think in the COVID times, I had obviously a couple of those, you know, races, you know, which were good for me, and I performed well, and, you know, put me on people's radar again. And he was interested. He, at the end, managed to convince Gene, and they gave me the opportunity.
What are the best moments you will remember from your 2 years at Haas?
Well, don't want to talk too soon, but hopefully, you know, come Sunday night Abu Dhabi, that will be, you know, one of the best moments that we've had together. Otherwise, all in all, I just had a very good time here, you know, working with the people. It's been very enjoyable, very fun, and just a lot of positive memories.
Next year, you are back at Sauber. In 2026, they will become Audi. How excited are you about driving for a big-name German manufacturer?
It is an exciting time ahead. Obviously, 2026, you know, they come with big regulation changes, which offers good opportunities for everyone in the paddock. But obviously, I hope with Audi being a manufacturer that, you know, they have a good package by then. And look forward to the challenge and the work with them in the future.
Okay. This year's Sauber team has not scored a single point. Is that a concern for you, at least for the 2025 season? And what are your expectations for next season?
Yeah, I think next season is certainly still a transition year. And I think it's not going to be easy. But you've seen here, you know, at Haas, how, you know, things can change from one season to another. And I think that's what Sauber needs to aim, or what, you know, they're going to try and aim as well, obviously, to, you know, change their package and be more competitive next year.
This may surprise you. We have a mutual friend by the name of Lars Kaufmann, okay? He told me you won the first two races of your racing life with their team, but he asked me to ask you, there was some adventure by the time you got to Hockenheim Ring from your home in Emmerich, driving your mom's VW Polo. Can you give us some details, please?
Yeah, I actually crashed twice on the ones on the highway on the Ugo Road there, because I was looking at the road map and kind of parallel kissed the Armco barrier, and then at the track parking, leaving the parking lot, I like drove into another car. I guess I was a bit nervous before my first race week.
What a start, huh? Okay, you have driven for some interesting team principal, Frank Williams, Dr. Vijay Mallya, and Lauren Stroll, all very different characters. Can you talk a little bit about experiences with each of them? Any interesting story you may have?
Well, like you say, you know, all very different personalities and characters, you know, all very successful, you know, and cool to work with them in their own ways. So yeah, you know, call myself fortunate and happy, you know, to have worked with many great people.
In your first year in Formula One, there were 19 races. Now they're talking about going up to 25. As a racing driver, what do you think should be the maximum?
I don't know. To be honest, right now, 24, it doesn't feel very stressful to me, or, you know, that I'm overloaded. But, you know, as a driver, we are in the best, you know, position. It's very comfortable for us. We arrive as one of the last people. We leave as one of the first. So for us, you know, it's the work strain is not that crazy bad. But a lot of other people, you know, that work in Formula One, it's really hard on them, and they don't have a lot of rest time and time with their families. So I think it's more question about that than for the drivers.
Now, this day and age, there's a lot of talk about penalties for track limits, unsafe release. Do you think the sport is too regulated, or what would be your suggestion as a driver to reduce these issues?
Yeah, I feel sometimes it is a bit, you know, we're making life more difficult for ourselves than it needs to be. But to be honest, I don't know what needs to be changed. That's obviously down to the rulemakers, as in the FIA, to find solutions for that.
Okay. Winning Le Mans at your first attempt, which was very impressive, does that make up for not having a podium in Formula One?
No, it's you know, always a great memory. That Le Mans victory was very special, one of the most special moments in my career. But still, you know, a Formula One podium or victory, I think would outweigh that.
Now, Le Mans is one of the greatest races on earth. Before the race, what were your expectations where you will finish?
We didn't really have any expectations, to be honest with you. It was obviously Nick Tandy, Earl Bamber, and myself, and we were, you know, put in as the third car, and you know, to have better chances for Porsche. And we didn't really, I think, have too many expectations. We just went in it very lighthearted, just wanting to have fun and, you know, give it our best shot. And it somehow happened that we won the race.
Speaking of podiums, you had a few close calls. Missing out on which podium was the most painful?
Yeah, like you say, there were a couple. They're all painful, to be honest. I think 2016, probably, the Monaco one. Because, you know, Monaco is obviously a very special place and circuit to be on the podium. So, yeah, probably that.
Andreas Seidel was at Porsche when you won Le Mans, and he was at Sauber when you signed to drive for them in 2025. If I may ask, who made the first approach, the driver or the team?
I don't remember. I do not.
Okay, no problem. Okay, we first met at Mugello when you were in F3 Euro Series. And if I remember correctly, Mr. Willy Weber was your manager at that time, or around that time. Do you have a manager now, or do you cut your own deals?
No, I do not have, like, the, you know, the typical classic manager in that sense. But I have, obviously, you know, people around me that support me with many things. As in a lawyer, you know, a person for marketing stuff, for communication and PR. So, yeah, I don't have to negotiate the deal, but, you know, obviously I know people in the industry and take part in the conversations and negotiations that usually are done by the lawyer.
The season has been full of surprises, and they continue even now. What was the biggest surprise for you, Lewis leaving for Ferrari or Adrian Newey leaving Red Bull?
Both were very big news, obviously. Maybe the Newey news more.
Now, I understand Hockenheim is under new management and there is talk of German Grand Prix coming back. Do you see any possibility in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, I wasn't aware. Thank you. I think, you know, with Audi coming back and maybe things happening in Germany, I mean, it could happen. You know, in Formula 1 I learned never say never. Things change quickly and take a turn, even unexpected turns often. So it would obviously be nice to have a home Grand Prix back. So let's see what happens.
Okay, you were right. We can do this under 15 minutes. I have one more question, though. One more question. Final question. You are now a papa. Your fellow German, Mr. Nico Rosberg, said he will not allow his kids near a scooter, let alone a race car. Will you be happy and supportive if your daughter wants to become a racing driver?
I think so. I mean, it's still so far away, so I haven't really given it much thought, but I hope she doesn't.
I understand. Okay, thank you so much. Thank you, Sean. All the best.
Nico, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nasser.
Now we come to historical Mondial, moments in motorsports history. Today's feature is called Seven Deadly Wins. Over the years and decades of Grand Prix motor racing, there have been memorable drives before and since the start of the Formula One Championship in 1950. Tazio Nuvolari in his Scuderia Ferrari entered Alfa Romeo at the 1935 German Grand Prix. A relatively unknown French Algerian Guy Moore winning the Monaco Grand Prix in 1934. An American in Europe, Jimmy Murphy, winning the 1921 French Grand Prix at Le Mans, driving a Duesenberg. These are all memorable moments in the glorious history of Grand Prix motor racing. In recent years, we have seen epic drives from Max in Brazil, not once but twice. Lewis Hamilton in his rookie season shining in pouring rain at Fuji Circuit. Who can forget the Monza magic in 2008 of a young Sebastian Vettel and a Toro Rosso? Today we will look at seven deadly wins since the start of the Formula One Championship. 1957 German Grand Prix. Fangio's final victory was also his finest. That it happened at the most demanding track in the history of Grand Prix motor racing makes it even more special. The Ferrari team opted for a non-stop race with Mike Hawthorn and Peter Collins. Fangio decided to start on softer rubber and do a one-stop strategy. When he brought his Maserati into the pits, he experienced spaghetti culture. His lead evaporated and he rejoined the race in third, over 40 seconds behind Collins, who was second at that time. The pursuit of prancing horses was like the wild dogs of Africa, relentless. He hunted down the leading Ferraris, setting numerous fastest laps, faster than his qualifying speed, and on lap 21 of 22, Fangio retook the lead and went on to his final and greatest victory, which gave him his fifth championship. 1961 French Grand Prix, dramatic last lap run to the checkered flag victory on Formula One Championship debut for Italian Giancarlo Baghetti. The venue was Reims in the French Champagne country close to the Belgian border. The street circuit was basically a triangle with long straights, perfect for slipstreaming. That's what Baghetti did in his sharp-nosed Ferrari 156. He took the bite out of Dan Gurney's lead in his Porsche and pulled out of the slipstream just before the checkered flag was waved. Interestingly, Baghetti had previously competed in two other non-championship Formula One races and had won both of them. His triple play put him in history books, apart from his compadre Nino Farina, who won the very first World Championship race in 1950 at Silverstone. No other driver since then has won a Formula One race on debut. Baghetti never won again in Formula One Championship racing. Now we come to the 1962 Belgian Grand Prix. What a place to win your first Grand Prix. Back then, the 8 mile Spa-Francorchamps was fast and lethal. Just 2 years earlier, two drivers, Chris Bristow and Alan Stacey, had lost their lives during the Belgian Grand Prix. Colin Chapman's young charge from Scotland, Jim Clark, put on a performance that earmarked him for future greatness. He qualified 12th and was leading the race on lap 9. His winning margin over the BRM of Graham Hill was 44 seconds. Clark would go on to win at Spa next 3 years in a row. All this at a track he did not like. Next, 1968 German Grand Prix and another Scottish sweep. In the rain at the mighty 14.2-mile-long Green Hill, those who were there had to wait for 9 seconds for the second-place car to appear, and that was at the end of the opening lap. Such was the dominance of JYS, also known as Jackie Stewart. The V-Scot started 6th and led all 14 laps. He shared the podium with Graham Hill and Jochen Rindt. Both these drivers would go on to become Formula One world champions, and they were over 4 minutes behind Jackie Stewart. And yes, that's 4 minutes, not 4 seconds. Now we come to the 1977 Italian Grand Prix. This is the story of passion and success driven by desire, and of course a lot of natural talent. The winner was born a few hundred miles from Parco Monza, and as a kid, came to watch his hero Alberto Ascari at the Autodromo. Then the family moved to a land far away. In 1977, victory in the Long Beach Grand Prix made him the only American driver to win his home Grand Prix. And in September of the same year, he also won his spiritual home Grand Prix at Monza in a Lotus. The photo of Mario Andretti taking the checkered flag and Colin Chapman throwing his cap in the air is as much frisson as the photo of Senna embracing Fangio on the podium after winning the Brazilian Grand Prix. And that's a personal opinion. 1985 Portuguese Grand Prix. There is only one word to describe this maiden victory. Speechless. Seeing is believing. I could not even believe watching the race at 5 in the morning in San Jose, California. Ayrton Senna winning his first Formula One race in heavy rain at Estoril, finishing a minute ahead of second-place Ferrari of Michele Alboreto. Rest of the field was a lap down, and this included world champions like Lauda, Prost, Piquet, and Rosberg. And finally, in this segment, we come to the 1996 Spanish Grand Prix. This was rinse and repeat of the 1985 Portuguese Grand Prix. It was Michael Schumacher's first victory in a red car. At the end of the opening lap, he was sixth. On lap 12, he was at the front, and lap by lap, it was Auf Wiedersehen, Fraulein. Winning margin was over 45 seconds over Jean Alesi and Jacques Villeneuve. Rest of the field was a lap down. And this is my suggestion. If anyone has not seen these two races, please check it out. They are available on YouTube. And the performance by Senna and Schumacher, all I can say is you have to see it to believe it. Simply incredible, or to borrow a phrase from Max, simply lovely, maybe even beyond that. Okay, folks, now we move on to remember Rega. Clay Regazzoni was an Italian-speaking Swiss driver from Lugano, which is in the Swiss canton of Ticino. He started out in hill climbs with Austin Healey and Mini Cooper. In 1965, he raced in Formula 3, driving a Brabham. He joined the Tecno team, which was run by Peter Zani brothers, and they are very famous Italian racing people. And together they moved into Formula 2 in 1968, and Regazzoni finished sixth in the championship. Tragedy struck at the Zandvoort round when he collided with English driver Chris Lambert with fatal consequences. Chris's father initiated legal proceeding against Regazzoni, which went on for a few years before they were dropped. Regazzoni and Tecno won the 1970 Formula 2 championship, winning races at Hockenheimring, Rouen, Ennepergusa in Sicily, and Imola. And he was the champion. Second was Derek Bell. Third, Emerson Fittipaldi. Same year, he made his Formula 1 debut in the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort for Ferrari. He finished an impressive fourth. The race was unfortunately marred by the fiery death of Frank Williams' friend and driver, Piers Courage. Following the death of Jochen Rindt at Monza in practice on Saturday, Regazzoni delivered a stunning and pleasant surprise to the Tifosis by winning the Italian Grand Prix in his fifth Formula 1 start for Ferrari. Then he went to BRM and came back to Ferrari. In 3 years, back at Maranello from 1974 to 1976, he won three important races. He won at the 14.2-mile-long Nürburgring in 1974 and lost the championship to Fittipaldi in the season finale at Watkins Glen. In 1975, he won at Monza, while Lauda's third-place finish made him first Ferrari world champion since John Surtees in 1964. In 1976, he won the very first Formula One race in the streets of Long Beach. His final victory was at Silverstone in 1979, and this was his first ever win for Frank Williams' team. And I remember listening to this live commentary on BBC World Service. Good old days. A serious accident at Long Beach Grand Prix when the brakes on his Ensign failed left Rega paralyzed from waist down. In 1994, he accepted invitation and raced in the Toyota Pro Celebrity Race during the IndyCar race weekend at Long Beach, a very courageous move, I must say. The man who survived a very dangerous era of motor racing and several accidents ran out of luck on an Italian autostrada near Parma in Italy. On December 15, 2006, he crashed his Chrysler Mini Voyager into a truck and lost his life. Mr. Rogers, would you have any thoughts and memories of Clay Regazzoni?
Yes, of course. The 79 winning for Williams stands out the most for me. It was exciting. I was a young whippersnapper, and I loved Williams in those young days. A terrible way to go, especially in a Plymouth Voyager. Thank you, Nass, for all those historical facts.
Now we come to F1 Fact 1. Kitchen meeting leads to cooking new records. As we all know, Lewis Hamilton has left the building at Brackley, which is Mercedes-AMG Formula 1 team HQ. Mercedes is the team that took Juan Manuel Fangio to the World Championship in the 50s, then left the Formula 1 arena. In the 1990s, they came back as an engine supplier to McLaren and won back-to-back championships with Mika Hakkinen. In 2009, they powered JB to the championship with Braun GP. They liked it so much, they bought the team. Then they recruited the most successful driver of all time. Out of retirement came Michael Schumacher with 91 Grand Prix wins and 7 championships. He was the god of Grand Prix racing, and many thought nobody could touch him. After all, at the time, the second most successful driver was 40 Grand Prix wins behind, and that was none other than Alain Prost, Le Professeur. Mercedes set their sights on signing one-time world champion Lewis Hamilton to replace the Red Baron. The late great Niki Lauda played a big part in trying to convince Lewis to jump ship from McLaren to Mercedes. Then came Ross Brawn for a meeting in the kitchen of Lewis's mom. Not sure if mom served lucky lasagna to the boys, but the rest is history. They say records are meant to be broken and somebody is already in hot pursuit. But today we will look at how bright LCH star was shining, driving for team with the star. Their association began in 2013 when Schumi was replaced by LCH. In his first race with the Silver Arrows, he qualified third and finished fifth. Their first victory came later in the season at the Hungaroring. In 2014 came the hybrid era with the Hoover Sound. Mercedes took control of this technology and Hamilton took control of the competition. 84 victories from a record 105 were scored driving for Mercedes. This included six of his record equaling seven championships. When the 2025 season begins, the chap from Stephen H. will be 40 years old. Not sure if he'll be showing his age riding a prancing horse, but if the package is right, I am expecting red skies at night and day on Grand Prix weekends. One hombre who can vouch for this is the man who beat him to the championship in the same team, Nico Rosberg. He had this to say about Lewis Hamilton on Sky Sports, and we will use this as famous last words on today's show. I quote, "He has the greatest natural talent that the sport has ever seen. There were so many occasions where we had the same car. We'd go out, come in, look at the data and see what he's done. It was, wow, that's not even human." End quote. Finally, we come to Musical Mondial. Winter is here, so it's time to invite Monsieur Francis Lay to the Palatial Studios. We thank you for listening, and please enjoy Snow Frolic. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Happy holidays.